take it from the 50% for giving loans to temples. What Prabhupada said was, just come up with extra money. Don't change that, but just add, increase to build this. That's how much we need. And anyway, at the end of this period, just so you know, those devotees who were selling books, the English books, from the end of 74 to sometime in 76, in addition to funding the whole BBT printing and giving loans, they came up with an additional, in U.S., in those years, 1970s, $1 million U.S. dollars was sent to this temple to build this. So at today's rate, what is that? 160 rupees is a dollar, so 60 million rupees? 600 million rupees? Is that a lot? For the 1970s, do you think that was a lot? And it wasn't stop what you're doing and take all your money, and this was continue what you're doing, but just come up with an extra $1 million in 1 year. So anyway, I don't want to make a long story from this, but we used to... We used to wear buttons that said, double it. That's all it said, double it. That meant whatever book distribution you were doing, double it. Do twice as much. And that became our, Prabhupada gave this order. And we shared the order with all the book distributors. Now we have to double it. Prabhupada liked the slogan of doubling it. And there's many stories I could tell you, but just by way of this introduction, it happened by the order of the pure devotee. It happened that we doubled book distribution to raise that extra money. And that's why I said that for any devotee in the world, still alive, from those years, if they come to this temple, they may not even realize what the connection is from what they did, what book selling they did, but when they come here and they see these gorgeous deities, the amazing, most beautiful deities, most merciful, just opulent deities. Something happens, whether you know it or not, you feel it immediately that you did some service for them. They let you feel that. I'm trying to share with you what I'm feeling right now from them, from your deities. And any book distributor would feel that by coming here, that we became their servants. And your servants. And that's Prabhupada's mercy on us. That by being his eternal servant, he made us the eternal servant of your deities as well. So, thank you all for maintaining this wonderful temple. And thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for letting us be a tiny servant to these amazing deities. Hare Krishna. Where did this come from? From the deities? Hare Krishna. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai
Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Chari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Chari. Yashoda Nandana Praja Chanaranjana Yashoda Nandana Praja Chanaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Chari Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Chari Yashoda Nandana Praja Chanaranjana Yashoda Nandana Praja Chanaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jaya Vishnupad Paramhansa Paravachakacharya Astutarasata Sri Simad His Divine Grace ISKCON Founder Acharya, BBT Founder Acharya, AC Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Premshikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shamakunda Radha Kunda Kira Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Sri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulasi Maharani ki jai, Jamuna Mai ki jai, Ganga Mai ki jai, Sisi Radha Rasa Vihari Mandir ki jai, Sri Sankirtan Jagya ki jai, Transcendental Book Distribution ki jai, All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to you, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Your mission, my wish, my dedication, 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 Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. What verse is that written? Which number? 8:17:7. And which one should I start with? I read a few before that. Start with 4. Okay. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, chapter 17, entitled The Supreme Lord Agrees to Become Aditi's Son. So I'll read text 4, 5, 6, they have no purport, and then we can chant text 7. Okay. Tasya pradurabhutata Bhagavan Adipurusha Pita Vashastatur Bahu Shankar Chakra Gada Dara. My dear king, you know which king this is, right? Parikshit Maharaj. And who's speaking to him? Sukadev Goswami. My dear king, the original supreme personality of Godhead, dressed in yellow garments and bearing a conch shell, disc, club, and lotus in his four hands, then appeared before Aditi. Tamnetra gocharam viksha sahastotaya sadharam nanama bhuvi kayena dandavat priti vivala. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead became visible to Aditi's eyes, Aditi was so overwhelmed by transcendental bliss that she at once stood up and then fell to the ground like a rod to offer the Lord her respectful obeisances. Sotaya badhanjalir ititam stita notseha ananda jalakulik shana babun tushnim pulakakulakvitish tadarshanat yutsava gatra vepatu. Aditi stood silently with folded hands, unable to offer prayers to the Lord. Because of transcendental bliss, tears filled her eyes. The hairs on her body stood on end. Because she could see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, she felt ecstasy and her body trembled. So now this text 7. You can chant with me. Pritya Shanai Gadgadaya Kira Harim Tushtava Sa Devi Aditi Kuru Udvaha Udvikshati Sha Pibati Eva Chakshusha Ramapatim Yagyapatim Jagatpatim Pritya Chanar Gadgadaya Giraharim Pritya Chanar Gadgadaya Giraharim Tushtava sa devya diti kurudvaha. Tushtava avasad devya diti kurudvaha udvikshati sa pibati vachakshusha udvikshati sa pibati vachakshusha ramapatim jagyapatim jagatpatim Prityashanayar gadgadaya girahariṁ Tushtavasa devya diti kurudvaha Udvikshati sa pibati vachakshusha Ramapatim jagyapatim jagatpatim Sitya Chaner Gadgadaya Gira Harim Tushtavasa Devya Titi Kurudvaha Udvipshatisha Pipativa Chakshusha Ramapatim Yajyapatim Jagatpatim Vitya chaner gadgadaya gira harim Tushtavasa devya diti kurudvaha Udvikshati ta patati chakshusha Ramapatim jagyapatim jagatpatim Vitya chaner gadgadaya gira harim Tushtavasa devya diti kurudvaha Udvikshati sa pavitaliva chakshusha Ramapatim jagyapatim jagatpatim Vichachane gadgadaya gira harim Sustavata devya diti gurudvaha Udvikshati sa pipativa chakshusha Ramapatim yagapatim nagatim Any Matajis want to try? Okay, but I want you to know Prabhupada did like it when the Matajis tried. That's all. Okay. Pritya, because of love. Shanai, again and again. Gadgadaya, faltering. Gira, with a voice. Harim, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tushtava, pleased. Sa, she. Devi, the demigoddess. Aditi, Aditi. Kuru Udvaha, O Maharaj Parikshit. Udvikshati, while staring. Sa, she. Pipati Iva, appeared as if she were drinking. Chakshusha, through the eyes. Ramapatim, unto the Lord, the husband of the goddess of fortune. Yagyapatim, unto the Lord, the enjoyer of all sacrificial ceremonies. Jagatpatim, the master and lord of the entire universe. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O Maharaj Parikshit, the demigoddess Aditi then began offering her prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a faltering voice and with great love. She appeared as though drinking through her eyes the Supreme Lord, who is the husband of the Goddess of Fortune, the enjoyer of all sacrificial ceremonies, and the master and lord of the entire universe. It's a short purport, and so we can repeat the text and then read the purport. O Maharaj Parikshit, the demigoddess Aditi then began offering her prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a faltering voice and with great love. She appeared as though drinking through her eyes the Supreme Lord, who is the husband of the Goddess of Fortune, the enjoyer of all sacrificial ceremonies, and the master and lord of the entire universe. Purport: after observing the Payavrata, Aditi was certain that the Lord had appeared before her as Ramapati, the husband of all good fortune, just to offer her sons all opulences. She had performed the yajna of Payavrata under the direction of her husband Kashyapa, and therefore she thought of the Lord as Yajnapati. She was completely satisfied to see the master and lord of the entire universe come before her to fulfill her desire. Om Gyan Chimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshushun Militan Jena Tasmai Si Gurave Namah. So, the first thing I have to say about this is not some earthly mundane mother praying for ordinary sons to have opulences. So we need to have the right context to understand this type of verse and purport, why it's even in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're reading a section of the Bhagavatam going back even to the sixth canto. After the fifth canto, the creation, the description of the universe has been given. Now, Sukadeva Goswami is beginning to explain how this universe operates, how it's managed, how universal affairs are conducted, and how there was a great secondary creation involving hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands and even millions of goddesses and gods from the heavenly worlds who are, it takes many souls to manage the affairs of the universe. And it's not that surprising. How many people does it take to manage the affairs of one city? You have a governing person, maybe a mayor. You have a city council. Then you have dozens and dozens of departments, police department, sanitation department, water department, electric department, jail department, food distribution. There's so many things that are involved that really involve thousands and thousands of people just to maintain one city. And this city is a tiny little spot on the map of the earth. And the earth is a tiny little spot on the map of the universe. So we're talking about Aditi, the mother of these demigods and demigoddesses, the mother of all these different personalities that are running this universe. So for her to pray for her sons to be restored to their position is not completely a materialistic idea as we see with mundane parenting here on earth. The purpose behind it, okay, naturally she has the motherly emotions, which are very strong emotions. The emotion of a mother, the love of mother for her children, is so strong in its elevated state, it resembles, it gives us a glimpse of what spiritual love is. Just a glimpse. It's a shadow, even though it's so intense, because the spiritual original emotion that this comes from is the emotion not just of Krishna being a parent, but of Krishna's devotees. It's inconceivable act and feeling as if they're a parent of Krishna. But here in our world, the emotion, the elevated emotion of a mother for her children, that love is as close as you'll see in this world to something that's pure, in the sense that it's unmotivated. And whatever the children do, it's there. It's uninterrupted. So we can get a glimpse of love, spiritual love, from just seeing the love of a mother. It helps us to see some examples and then imagine what the spiritual reality of that emotion really would be like. You take the emotion of a mother and you multiply it 100 times. Well, that's not enough. Maybe, what are we here on earth compared to these demigods? Okay. What is a human here on earth compared to a little ant? Are we 10,000 times more complicated, more intelligent, having more power? 100,000 times? Just on this one world, that difference between one species and another. Just imagine that is the difference between humans on this earth and the devas. So, in other words, the ant can't imagine that we build these things. How these things are built, that they has no idea or conception of our life as humans. Similarly, we really have no conception of the life of these devas. It's beyond our, as Prabhupada called it, puny or teeny brain of a human to grasp. When Srila Prabhupada first gave us the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, he wrote in volume 2 a foreword or an introduction. Some years ago, even before my time, the decision was made to use the introduction from volume 1 in all 3 volumes. We used to print the first canto in 3 volumes, because that's how Prabhupada brought it. And Prabhupada had only written an introduction for volume 1 and 2, but not for volume 3. So when we were reprinting the Bhagavatam for the first time, back in the 1960s, the devotees were wondering, well, what should we do for Volume 3's introduction? And somehow one of the editors made this decision, well, just take the introduction from Volume 1 and use it in Volume 2 and 3, so that way it... So many devotees have never seen the introduction that Prabhupada wrote to Volume 2, because it hasn't been reprinted. But for those who have seen it, there are some interesting sections of that introduction. And Prabhupada is relating a story in the introduction of how a friend of his was astonished that he was taking up the task of writing, translation and purports to Srimad Bhagavatam in 60 volumes. His friend said, how is it possible that you could write that much about God? 60 volumes? How could there be that much to know? I mean, outside of India, the other great religions of the world have one book. And after that, they have the writings of their saints or prophets, but not much about God, not many books. So Prabhupada's relating, he's writing this in his introduction, saying that he had to laugh and explain to his friend that the only reason I'm limiting it to 60 volumes is because of our teeny, puny brain. In the world of the devas, he wrote in that same introduction, they study tens of thousands of volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam. Not 60 volumes. Maybe a million volumes. That's the difference between their brain and our brain. Human ant. Something like that. Gives you an idea. So we're reading about these devas that really have powers in a life that we can barely even imagine. I mean, after all, you have Prajapatis, and they are planning the creation of life all over the universe. In their minds, they are conceiving of the different species, and then they are, either from their minds or however else they do it, impregnating their many wives. And some of the offspring appear as devas, and some appear as great serpents, and some appear as great animals, and some appear as aquatics, and some appear as trees. I mean, that's what Prajapatis do. We can't even begin to imagine their job in the service of Krishna, making the 8,400,000 different species of life for the souls to go through their journey, those who have left Krishna, those who reject serving Krishna, who have to come down into this material world. There's so many servants of Krishna that have to organize this world. So it's quite fantastic to our minds. How can one person give birth to different species? But that's what happened. That's how the universe is filled up. So, you know the story of why she is praying for her sons, her devas, her children, to be restored. Because that's the proper way for the universe to function, for the government of the universe to operate. The demigods need to return to their position. So with that context, she's performing this amazing jagya. And I know it may seem, again, out of context, what was that jagya? She worshipped the deities, she lived on milk, and she gave prasadam out, and she did this for 12 days. Do not think or mistake her 12 days and this jagya for anything we do in 12 days here on earth. Do not make that mistake. That's not what she did. First of all, her mind had to be emptied of anything material. Any material thought, even for a microsecond, she emptied her mind during these 12 days of the, whatever the heavenly world 12 days are. Does anyone know the difference between a day of Indra and a day on earth? I can't hear. I'm really unable to hear. Are you saying that one day is 6 months?
Hari. So earthly planet, when past 6 months, that is the one night. And when other 6 months pass, that makes together one day.
So well, one day on Earth is, on an Indra planet, is 1 year here on Earth?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's use that 12 days, this Jagya she did. Fasting except on milk, keeping her mind in a state of samadhi, not allowing one material iota of anything to enter her mind, worshiping the deities in her time day and night continuously. No other eating and no other sleeping took place. And during that worship, and of course, worshiping deities involves offering wonderful foods prepared with love. Then she had to distribute them day and night. No rest, no break from this pure marathon, if you want to call it that. And as she did it so expertly that God himself appeared before her. So that's another interesting part of this story. When you study how this universe is operating by these devas, starting with Lord Brahma, and going all the way down, the Prajapatis, the Manus, all the different levels of government management, how do they get their powers? How does this happen? They have to perform great jagyas, great austerities. We read about these amazing austerities that they perform. Lord Brahma, for what, 100 years? Of his time, we don't even know what that means. Just to have the purity of sacrifice on for Krishna's pleasure, that he will get the ability to make the world the way it's pleasing to Krishna, the way it, Krishna wants it designed. And each of the Prajapatis had to go through the similar, unbelievably difficult jagyas and austerities to become empowered to do their service. And here is another story of a great soul, Aditi, performing great jagya to satisfy Krishna. The Bali Maharaj is the leader of all these demons, but because he's so protected by the Brahmins, he's indestructible, right? The devas cannot defeat him by any force. And they are advised to flee because there's nothing they pray to their spiritual master, please give us powers. And he says, it's impossible. They already have too much power from Brahmins. Great, great Brahminical souls have blessed them. You cannot defeat them with any material power. Even if you went all the way to Brahma and prayed for benediction, you can't defeat them. So this was the beginning of the plan for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear as Aditi's son, which will finally lead to the restoration of the universal government and Bali Maharaj giving up the universe. So I think the point I'm trying to make about having to sacrifice and perform great jagyas in order to be empowered to do your service is something that we have all experienced in our life, in our Krishna consciousness movement. When Srila Prabhupada first began this movement. And he started training up his first disciples, as you know. They had no cultural background in Krishna consciousness. They were not Indian. There's no background, no family religion, no cultural background. So brand new. Taking someone that didn't know anything and had no reference to Vedic culture from anything in their life. So he starts making devotees, 1966, 1967. What happens by 1968? He's taking devotees that are two-year devotees. Maybe they've been only two-year devotees. And he's sending them, here, go to this city and open up a temple. Just do it. And some of them, he's saying, leave your country. Leave your family, leave your country. Go to another continent and open up a temple. They've only been devotees for 2 years. And it's not like they ever heard of Krishna consciousness in their youth from their family. They're not Indian. Can you imagine what these first devotees did? What the sacrifice was? Taking the order of their spiritual master, giving up everything, giving up anything resembling material comfort, and just going and doing. That was their sacrifice. And by that jagya, they were successful in starting temples all over the world. There are many examples of how the performance of great jagya empowered devotees in our movement. In 1969, for example, Srila Prabhupada had he was continuing his translation of Srimad Bhagavatam. He was just starting the third canto when there were some indications, just materially, of health. He had had heart attacks coming to America. In 1967, he had another heart attack. 68, he had to go back to India. The devotees never thought they would see him again. He came back. So Prabhupada was very concerned, is Krishna going to give me the time to finish the whole program of giving Srimad Bhagavatam to the world? So knowing the great desperate need of the souls to know who God is, and how in Kali Yuga it is, the world is covered in such ignorance, nobody knows who God is, even outside of India for sure. So Prabhupada stopped translating the Srimad Bhagavatam and decided, I'm going to create the summary of the whole 10th canto in two volumes, the Krishna books. And from 1969 until around March or April of 1970, he worked on the two volumes of the Krishna book and the Nectar of Devotion. That's what he was writing during that time. And how to print this book, how to present Krishna to the world. Prabhupada's idea, as you know, was to show Krishna through transcendental art. So, 1969, so now these are 2 and 3 year old devotees. Some are just 1 year devotees. Some have just been initiated. Anyone with a little art ability, Prabhupada is collecting them. Some from L.A., some from Montreal, some from New York, and he sends them all to Boston. Around September of 1969, they bought this temple in Boston. Prabhupada did not want to establish ISKCON Press in a rental building. He wanted a building that we owned. Well, the first building that ISKCON ever owned was the temple in Boston. That's a whole story of that marathon, that competition around America, who would end up collecting enough to buy the first temple. And Prabhupada was tantalizing them with saying, whoever gets that first temple, I will establish ISKCON Press there, and I will go there. So that was a big prize. But anyway, Satsarup and Giriraj won the competition. Giriraj was in Boston. Satsarup was in Boston. And they got the money for that first temple. And that's where ISKCON Press was created. So Prabhupada sent four artists. That's all he had that were really good. There was one or two others, but in Boston, we had Jadarani, Bhardwaj, and then from L.A., Prabhupada sent Devahuti, and this new devotee named Bhakta Mark, who had just taken initiation as Murlidhar. And when the art department first started, Prabhupada said, okay, I want each of our temples to have five paintings. The painting of Srila Prabhupada, the painting of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, the painting of the Panchatattva, the painting of the Panchatattva on Sankirtan, and the painting of Radha and Krishna with the eight gopis. So they were painting these paintings over and over again for all the temples, which were about 12 temples. That's how many temples we had. And so now it's time in Prabhupada's vision to give the world Krishna. So he tells his artists, I need a painting a day. That's impossible. Yes, I'm not the first person to say to Prabhupada, that's impossible. They said it a few years before me. So then Prabhupada explained, I am not just going to write about Krishna. I must show the world the beauty and opulence and power of Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna, the abode of Krishna. The world has no idea what God is. And so these artists are thinking amongst themselves, this is really impossible. He wants us to paint the most beautiful paintings the world has ever seen. What are we? We're supposed to do better than Rembrandt and Da Vinci and Raphael, and how is that even possible? So then they say, Srila Prabhupada, why don't we get some artists from India? He said, no. We have to have devotees do this. Because you don't understand what beauty, real beauty is. You think real beauty is based on what you see with your mundane eyes. That is not the definition of artistic beauty. So, Prabhupada, what is the definition of beauty? And Prabhupada said, there's two parts to real artistic beauty. The first part is, it has to be completely authorized. There can't be any speculation, any imaginative idea, as the artists of the world create imaginative things based on what they see. No, this has to be purely based on Shastra. That's the first definition of absolute beauty. It's beyond mental speculation. It's perfect. Then the second definition, it can only be created with bhakti. It is not a material skill. No matter how much a mundane person practices, their art may appear beautiful to your dull senses, but not to the eyes of a pure realized soul. A pure realized soul looks at art and sees, is there bhakti in the creation of this art? And Prabhupada said, that is how you create spiritual art. So, after teaching them this, they still felt very inadequate. Prabhupada, we don't have the skill. We know what you're trying to accomplish, but we will fall short. Our art is primitive, is simple, childlike, and you should send us to Italy and let us study the great masters of the Renaissance, and in a few years we'll come back. And so that was their proposal to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, we're not interested in that. We're interested in empowering you through jagya. This is how the universe works. You perform jagyas to satisfy the Lord, and if you do it purely and very nicely, the Lord will appear. In different ways, the Lord will appear and empower you. So Prabhupada said, okay, this is what you're going to do. Oh, by the way, he sent them a letter. He hadn't even started dictating the Krishna book yet, but he said, here's the first 7 paintings. And 2 weeks later, he sent them another letter. Here's the next 6 paintings. And he describes what he wanted in these paintings. They hadn't even read. You have to picture this in 1969. There's no Krishna book. These are Americans. They never heard of Krishna. They have no idea, except maybe some posters in some store they might have seen. Other than that, they've never heard of Krishna, and no idea what this is supposed to look like. And Prabhupada's already writing letters. These are the first 7 pastimes. These are the next 6 I want painted, and so on. So when Prabhupada rejected their idea to go to school, art school, he said, no, you're going to sit in front of the easel. This is your jagya. You sit in front of this easel. To tell you the truth, they did not have easels. This is 1969, Boston. Coldest winter in the history of Boston up in a century. Somehow they found enough money to get wood to make the frame and to stretch the canvas, but there was no easel. They either leaned it against a wall in the attic, or they had it flat on the floor and they were leaning over it. And they were wearing heavy winter coats and they were wearing heavy gloves because there was no money to heat the temple in 1969 Boston. They could not get the heat up to that attic, and that's where the art department was. So this is like the worst. First of all, no artist paints like that. It's impossible. There's that word again. You're wearing a bulky jacket, sweaters, and layers of clothing, and gloves. And you're supposed to paint masterpieces that are more beautiful than Da Vinci and Raphael. So Prabhupada said, you just pick up that brush, and you sit in front of that canvas. And the whole time, you chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And while you're chanting, this will be the most intense chanting of your life. You will be crying to Krishna. You feel helpless. The task is completely beyond any of your abilities. So naturally, you feel desperate. You feel helpless. You feel anxiety. And you're so determined to follow my order and do this that all you can do is chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And with each syllable you're praying to Krishna, please take my hand, take control of it, make it your instrument, move it any way you want. I have to do this for Prabhupada, and I don't know how. Krishna, 8 hours, 10 hours a day chanting. I don't know how many rounds that is, but that was all they did. And Prabhupada said, if you do that every single day, day after day after day, that's how you will learn how to paint spiritual windows to the spiritual world, amazing spiritual art. It will be definitely filled with bhakti. And it will be authorized. No imaginative things. And there's some funny stories about how they avoided that imagination. One of the artists had painted Narada Muni with using as a model some Renaissance famous personality, and Prabhupada rejected it and said, that's the bodily muscular shape of a meat eater. That's not Narada Muni. Threw it the whole thing out. Start all over. Prabhupada had to explain the difference between a spiritual body, the body of a Brahmin, a Deva, and the body of a meat eater or a demon. And they had no idea how Krishna's clothing was supposed to look. I think I've told this story. So the artists were in Prabhupada's room, and they had some brahmachari that was putting on a dhoti, and they were looking at how the dhoti is worn by a brahmachari back in 1969. And Prabhupada said, no, that's not how Krishna, that's not how Mother Yasoda dressed Krishna. So Prabhupada stood up in his room. He took a dhoti and he started tying it in a way they had never seen before. No one had ever seen before. And then he took another dhoti and created a sash. And before they realized what was happening, they were so stunned. Oh my God, Prabhupada is modeling for us. And Jadarani had the nerve to say, Srila Prabhupada, could you just do that again? Because now we'll study what you're doing. And Prabhupada did it again. And that's how they learned how baby Krishna and Krishna as a young boy is supposed to appear in his yellow clothing and everything, the way Mother Yasoda, exactly the way Mother Yasoda would dress him. Because only someone like Prabhupada could demonstrate. Because that's Prabhupada. I mean, the thing that we all realized about Prabhupada, you know, in America, during the time of the 60s, many people were searching for a guru. I don't know how that idea came, but it came. It became a very popular trend. Rock stars were searching for gurus, and that was influencing people, and the news media was jumping on it. And so everyone had their Swami. But what the devotees started to realize about Prabhupada, those early days, is that this is not just a guru in a line of gurus. This is not even just a pure devotee, Uttama Adhikari, which is very rare amongst gurus. This is a guru come down to this world from the spiritual plane. Shaktivesh Avatar, his godbrothers called him. Incarnation of the potency of Lord Nityananda, his godbrothers once said. We are talking about the descent of God's power into Prabhupada from directly not by only Vaikuntha, from Goloka Vrindavan. So the devotees who were with Prabhupada began to realize he's not of this world. He's not just a guru who practiced and became a guru. He's just not of this world who became a guru to teach and to establish the Krishna consciousness movement of Lord Chaitanya in the West. So that level of realization and faith made the devotees willing to do anything that Prabhupada asked. Anything he asked, they were willing to try because they knew he's not just a regular person becoming a guru. He's an eternal Nitya Siddha who descended to act as a guru. Very unique. Very unusual. So anyway, getting back to our story of this Jagya in the coldest winter, the artists start doing this, and they also had to give up their ego because they realized we can't make enough paintings that Prabhupada wants. He wants 100 paintings. Now let's see. September, October, November, December, January, February, March. The book is going to be printed in April. So we got 7 months to do 100 paintings. And each artist on their own might have taken 3 to 4 months to do one painting. And there were only 4 artists. So because Prabhupada had asked and because they had this realization of Prabhupada's position and because they realized what he was about to do is bring God to the world for the first time, because they were so caught up in it, they were willing to do anything to assist, to be a servant. So for an artist to set aside his ego or her ego is not easy. It's very hard. But they created an assembly line where Bhadraj would mastermind the painting in terms of the sketching of it, the composition of it, planning the detailed composition of how it was going to be. And then Jadarani would come and start filling in the colors as best she could. And then Muralidhar would come and add the final details. And by doing this, they produced one painting per week, 7 months in a row. So they had to do more because, 7 months times 4 is 28 weeks? No. They came up with 100 paintings. So what is that math? Let's say it was 8 months times 4 weeks. That's 32 weeks. That's 3 paintings a week. Now, one artist was not in the assembly line. Her name was Devahuti. She had a different style, and they felt it best, both based on her age. I mean, after all, she was in her 30s. That was considered very old. They felt, and she has such a unique style, so let her paint her own painting. So she did about 12 paintings for the Krishna book, and the assembly line did the rest. Anyway, by the time we sent it to the printer in April, and you know the story from Shamasundar's book about how we had no money, and Dainapan was owed so much money for Back to Godhead magazines, they were not going to print the Krishna book. And Prabhupada reminded Dainapan that when he first met them, he said, I want to establish 2 lines, one line for printing magazines, one line for printing books. And they said, yeah, but you owe so much money on this first line, why would we ever give you credit for the second line? And that's when Prabhupada sent Shamsundar to George Harrison, got the money, sent it to Dainapan, okay, I'll pay you up front on line number 2, the book line, with a deposit, and then you print the rest. And they agreed to that. So all these things were happening. And When the Krishna book came out in April of 1970, it had its the two volumes, you add them up, about 9,500 paintings were done by that jagya, that sacrifice, that giving up of any feeling of comfort, any feeling of personal enjoyment on the mundane bodily platform. Just complete jagya, 24 hours a day, that's what they were living. That's how they became empowered. Same way devotees that were sent to open temples became empowered. Same way book distributors became empowered. Finally, when Prabhupada told us print 17 volumes in 2 months. Now, 17 volumes, and each volume has 6 paintings. That's 100 whatever. In 2 months? That's not possible. It was so easy for me to say to Prabhupada that was impossible. And I was such a fool to tell someone who knows God, who comes from God's world, that something is impossible. I mean, as soon as Prabhupada told me what a fool I was, the first thing that happened in my brain was I started picturing the planets floating in the universe perfectly. And the orbits, and days and nights, and how rain falls throughout the universe to nourish and cause. I started seeing a little glimpse of the universe, the power of God. And I immediately felt like an idiot. How could I say something's impossible? What could possibly be impossible when you're talking to God or His representative? It's foolish. So our jagya for the 17 volumes was similar. Give up eating, give up sleeping. Literally give up eating and sleeping for 60 days, 2 months, and just work around the clock. And as it says in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, for my devotee, I'll preserve what they have and I will carry what they lack. And by the order of the pure representative of God, those devotees at ISKCON Press were carried by Krishna and were able to survive without even feeling too much distress, with no sleep, practically no food, for 60 days to do that jagya. So we have this history in our movement that resembles some of the stories you're reading in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The great souls perform these great jagyas with pure consciousness to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they become empowered in that way. And this is the story of our universe. This is the story of life for all time. So I asked at the beginning, was anyone here in the 1970s? It doesn't matter. You're here now in the 2018s. And any of you who perform jagyas, Sankirtan jagya, deity worship jagya, any of these jagyas that you perform, if you do it with pure, intense desire to satisfy the Lord and to set aside your personal desires, you will also experience the results of being empowered to do amazing things, because that's how souls do amazing things in this universe. And that's how devotees do amazing things in the Hare Krishna movement. Okay, so anyone want to make a comment or questions? Yes. Yeah. Is there a mic? Because I can't. Thank you.
The demigods were displaced from their position. Who was managing the affairs of the universe, like rain, wind, fire?
Bali Maharaj took over everything.
They were captured. So
yes, he took that over. And they all assumed different forms. They gave up appearing as demigods. They transformed themselves. These devas have abilities that our puny brains can't even imagine. And they hid in different places all over the universe in different forms. Probably some as animals, some as this, some as that, waiting until there would be an opportunity to return. But whoever conquers the heavenly world has to then run the universe their way. But they have to maintain those things. Yes. Hiranyakashipu had to do that, and Bali Maharaj had to do that. They can't let everything fall apart.
Thank you.
Yes. You need a microphone.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for the
Hare Krishna.
Wonderful class.
You got to speak louder.
So, it was very thrilling to hear about the empowerment done by Srila Prabhupada to his devotees. So, in that, you were talking about feeling helpless and asking the mercy from Krishna. So, how we do in our...
I'm not hearing you. You're starting to whisper again. You got to talk loud. Thank you.
You were talking about empowerment.
Yes.
Of the devotees. So, they were going through great desperation, helplessness.
Yes.
So, how we experience that kind of emotions in our life now?
Well, I think for the Sankirtan devotee it's easy. And in each department, in each service, you have to find that vision. But the Sankirtan devotee, it's very easy, because the second you walk out, you know that your mission is to save every single soul who is completely asleep in their stupid material bodies, acting as if they are their bodies, and that if you don't save them, what will happen? Prabhupada has written, if you've gotten up to the eighth canto, you have read more than once, that these souls had to go through millions and millions of births to get a human form of life. Millions of births. And now they finally have the human form of life. And if you don't awaken that soul, in this age of Kali, where their life is just non-stop sinful activity, sinful thoughts, sinful desires, sinful acts, then the whole process will have been wasted. And they will be sent way down. Maybe not see another human birth for thousands of births. Maybe longer, millions of births. How does that not make you feel desperate to save them? They're all part of Krishna. You're part of Krishna. They're family. They're your family. And they're going to hell. And you can't not feel desperate. You can't just ignore it. Oh, I don't care if they go to hell. No, you can't think like that or feel like that. You're a Vaishnav. The quality of Vaishnav is to be compassionate to every soul. So, feeling desperate is natural. In fact, if you are not feeling desperate, you better chant better rounds. And hear and pray better. Something's not right. Because the definition of a devotee is he wants to save the whole world. And he's very desperate to save the world before these souls go to hell. When you're done with your rounds and you're done with your study, you should be feeling, I can't wait to get out there. I'm like the fire brigade. I got to put out the fire of material life. I'm the first responders. I've got to save them. We are training devotees to be first responders, warriors in the war against Maya. So naturally, you should be bursting and feel that desperation. I've got to, and it's beyond my power. Krishna, please, You give me the words. You make my words touch their heart. I think this is a normal feeling for everyone to have. I pray you all have that feeling. Thank you very much. Glory to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.